What we're going to do today is we're going to continue the discussion about spiritual mysticism. As we discussed last week, it's very important to understand what it means, to understand the way it impacts our spiritual life. Because the experiences, the feelings, the depth of spirituality rests upon our being able to utilize our mystical aspects of ourselves. Now, while I was meditating this morning in front of the deities, I got another point of view, another way to think about, another way to discuss this very important point, and I'd like to share that with you now. The mystical aspect of our energy is very much linked to the way in which there is a similarity between all living beings. Now, last week we had many questions, and I couldn't answer all the questions. So one of the questions I got last week was a request for me to explain in more detail the concept of the matrix, the concept of a personal matrix as compared to a group matrix. Now, there are many different kinds of matrixes. There are many different kinds of ways in which you can look at spirituality. But the most important aspect of it is what makes a person capable of entering into the spiritual matrix. Why is it possible, or is it at all possible, to enter into this matrix? The reason that this matrix works, or the reason why our interaction within this matrix of existence can work, is due to the similarity of energy. Now, everything is ultimately of the same spiritual essence that we have heard again and again in different traditions, different philosophies, and in the Vedic philosophy itself. Even without getting into complicated discussions, simply from the Bhagavad Gita we hear Vasudeva Sarvam Iti, we understand that Vasudeva or Krishna is everything, which means that the energies of the divine, the energies of the supreme, are everywhere. They're all pervasive. Now, if you just consider that on an energetic level, if we are similar in our spiritual energy to the Supreme, to the Divine, then if the Divine's energy is everywhere throughout all existence, then we have, by definition, a similarity to everything everywhere. Now, our similarity and the similarity of all things is, of course, a similarity of the basic fundamental energy which we all are. Now, this similarity is the essence upon which we enter into the mystical understanding of existence. Just consider, if we were to theoretically talk about what a matrix might be, it would be a web or interaction. It would be layers of energy through which one could move if one knew how. In the Bhagavatam, it speaks about how whole of existence is put together, otum protum, in the horizontal and vertical by which threads are woven into a fabric or a fiber of existence. So, when we speak about a fabric, now, let's say you have a fabric or a cloth. You can go to any part of that cloth by just reaching your finger and touching it like that. Now, that's because the cloth is something separate from you. Your finger is another thing that has the power to move and connect to the cloth. You have the eyes to see where you want to go. Now, most people think that they can't do that because they're talking about objects or energies or people or situations which are far away from them, and they're very tiny. They don't have the capacity to look above and point down and connect. Now, that's actually not true. It is true when you are in a physical realm following physical laws. Now, unless you are a very concentrated, focused kind of mystic yogi who can affect material energy that is physically manifested, most people cannot do a transformation of something physical unless they move to it or make something happen with active physical ingredients and force and effort, work. Now, as we started to explain 2 weeks ago, when a mystic yogi or when some kind of a person who has that capacity, we gave the example of Uri Geller bending spoons, does something which affects physical elements, it is because they have learned the art of projecting their energy, which is very powerful, focusing it into a physical object and vibrating their energy through concentration in the same way as the atomic particles of that, and then by their will rearranging the structure so that a spoon would bend or something would take place. Now, in our discussions here, I promised you from the very beginning that I would only speak about things which are related to my own realization, related to my own experiences, and so I feel I should share with you something now according to that principle. Because if I were to simply be speaking from the point of view of the something I've heard or something I might have thought or something that is read from somewhere, then I really wouldn't be able to share with you a experience which would help you create or recreate a similar experience, which is the point of what I'm doing. Now, in that case, it would be incorrect of me to not share my personal experience. So therefore, only for that reason, I'm going to do it now. I don't want you to think that this is any kind of self-aggrandizement. It would be very wrong for that. But in the same exact way that a spoon can be bent, for instance, in the same exact methodology, however, with a different kind of a concentration, people can do physical healing. Now, somebody we know had a very high fever, which was going higher and higher as the day went by. So I was called upon to try to do something about it. So what I did was exactly what I've been talking about. I took my energy and I intended to engage in a distance healing session. So I projected my consciousness to the place where the sick person was and then scanned to see what was wrong exactly, and felt that immediately there was too much heat in the body. So then I placed that person in a cake of ice, crushed ice, everywhere ice, all over the body, and placed within that ice, those ice crystals, a cool blue light to magnify the cooling effect. And then a bunch of other things which are not so relevant to this, but the point being that by focusing, concentrating, and projecting energy in a vibratory manner which was connected to and harmonious to the particular person's body, with the intention to make a transformation, the fever went down. Now let's talk about that in relationship to the matrix. Let's talk about that in relationship to the mystical aspect of spirituality, because I think it's a very, very relevant point. Now, physically speaking, you cannot physically connect with another physical being far away from you. That's not possible, because physical things depend on physicality. They depend on the connections between physical objects and physical beings. But when it comes to other kinds of energy, those energies have different realms within which they work. For example, the mind works on a mental platform. Everyone has experience in dreams of connecting with persons they may have never met before or persons they know in the dream state and having interactions which are all taking place on this mental platform. And because of that, everybody enters into this mental matrix when they are sleeping, whereby they can connect all over, all around with different energies. And because it's on that dream platform, we're not really aware of how it works because the mind, having the similarity with other minds, just finds its way, just as air finds its way through other parts of the air, or water flows through other water, or electricity flows with other electricity. It's just the nature of the energy. Or, put another way, the energy seeks out other similar energy. It's like a magnetism. It seeks out that which is similar to it. It thrives on, it is hungry for that kind of connection. Now, because of that, we find there is a symbiosis, a sympathetic interaction between an energy. In other words, by the nature of energy, it has this nature to interact with other similar kinds of energy, even without your consciously needing or wanting to do it. Now, before I get to how this impacts spiritual mysticism, how it impacts the oneness or unification that is all there by its very nature among spiritual beings, I want to again relate that to the healing experience. What? The healing experience. I want to relate it to the healing experience. Because when you do that, what happens is that you get a very interesting understanding of what's really happening. And when you understand what's really happening, entering into it any place you want becomes much easier. Now, I'm an individual. I will always be an individual. My energy is individuated, which means it has a source in me as a person. My spiritual center, my spiritual essence is a source from which my energy flows. That's for sure. But I can connect to all spiritual energy easily because we are of the same nature. We are of the same fundamental spiritual nature. We are within that complex of energy that is there from the Supreme, from the Divine. We are all part of that divine unity, that oneness. And because of that, we can experience connection with all living entities everywhere when we mutually agree to do so. When I agree to connect to you and you agree to connect to me spiritually, for example, when we have these meditations and we make a ring around the world or we hold each other's hand etherically, we can do it because we are all of the same spiritual nature. We are all of the same spiritual family. So to connect is easy when we want to. And we can all connect to the deity. We can all connect to the supreme. We can connect to the divine source of all things because of the same exact reason. It's just the nature of what we are, the similarity there, the family connection, the deep intimate intimacy, the way in which we are of the same spiritual energy that allows this deep connection to take place when we wish it to be. Actually, it's already there. The thing is that we have chosen, we have decided, we feel it's somehow advantageous to us to maintain the separation. We feel it somehow it protects us, or we feel it somehow or another manifest what we think we are better. Now, that's okay. I mean, after all, we do need our own space. There's nothing really wrong with that. It's just that one should be aware of the fact that what's really going on is we choose to separate. It's not that we choose to become connected and feel the oneness, because that's our nature. We choose to separate. And when you see it from this other point of view, the way in which spirituality manifests becomes very different. Because when you're struggling to connect from a disconnected state, you're struggling, you think you've got all these obstacles, you've got all these illusions to break through, you've got all these problems to deal with, you're struggling to connect. You're in the point of weakness and everything else has strength. But the actual situation is quite the opposite. We are already connected. We are already one. We are already of the same nature. And we then choose to not be connected with others because we find it advantageous to do so. So we are in the position of power. We are the ones who are choosing to connect or not to connect or to do what we wish to do in relationship with others. So as we feel it important, as we see it's important, we shall move into the world and create our interactions. When we understand that, it gives us great strength because we are the ones who have the strength, and it's others in relationship with us who might have a problem. Now let's consider again the healing action. What it really means is that there's a person that has the same spiritual energy as you to transform yourself, or no, not transform, to create the connection between you and another person. You have to first of all want to, which is that you take down the usual barrier for the sake of sanity, and you say, now I'm going to connect. And then there's no space in spirituality. There's no time in spirituality. So you simply desire to place yourself in the location of that other person. In our meditation last week, we did just that. We all placed ourselves in other locations. This was something that you can put under your conscious control. This is something that you can project as you like. You can do with as you like when you know it is under your control. So now, to place yourself in another location is not that difficult. Many experienced it last week. Now, when you're standing in another location, you can just act as you would normally act. The only thing that would stop it is if you were to say, oh, I can't do that. So let's review. First, there is motivation. You want to do something good for somebody else. The first point, the motivation, which creates the intention. I am now going to do this with the intention of helping. Now, obviously, you have to have the capacity to understand what I'm talking about, understand these feelings, have connection to your spiritual energy, and so on. This is not a discussion for those who don't have that fundamental prerequisite quality. But what we are speaking of is those who have such a feeling, capacity, can do that, which is anybody who tries. It may take a while before you catch on to the point, but it is not very difficult to do. When you try, when you succeed, when you do it, and you're there, you then act as you would act if there was actually a physical location, if you were both in the same physical location. If there was a physical proximity or there is an energetic proximity, there's really no difference when you're working with energy. Now, if I wanted to hand you a glass of water, a physical glass with physical water in it, I would have to be in physical proximity to you. But if I am going to share an energy with you, I don't. Because this energy, this energetic exchange is not dependent on physical connection, because it's an exchange of energy. Now, once you have that connection and you experience that interchange of energy and you are connected, then you start to do things. Now, that's where the matrix comes into play, because using the matrix doesn't just mean you put yourself somewhere. It also means that you can take ice from a freezer or from the mountains. You can take that same energy of ice and bring it to where you need it to be. You can pack the person's body in that ice. Now, I know this sounds like, oh, this is impossible, this is so strange, but have faith in yourself. You can do such a thing. Now, I'm not saying you should, but this is a very good example. Now, obviously, you shouldn't mess around with such things unless you know something about medicine. You know something about the physical body. You know something about the way the body works. You know something about how to assist a body or to assist somebody's energies. You know about chakras. You know about the way energies work. You shouldn't try to do such a thing as this example unless you have this experience. Let's change the subject now, because that particular example of healing may be confusing, especially if one is not aware about the physical nature of existence and the way in which you can affect people through healing. Let's use the example of love, because love is the supreme healing energy. With love, you can do so many things. You can heal in so many ways. You can do things in ways which you couldn't even imagine. With love, you can conquer so many difficulties and problems. With love, you can do things that you wouldn't even be able to imagine. For example, with love, you can heal wounds which people aren't even aware exist. Let's say you know nothing about any techniques. You know nothing about healing. You know nothing about psychology. But if you just send your pure loving energy to someone, this heals on such a deep vibratory level. And on this deep vibratory level, you can make so many wonderful effects. One can do so many wonderful things simply with love. Now, this love, the way in which we exchange love, this is totally and completely a vibrational exchange through the matrix. People can feel the love they have for each other by simply meditating on each other. Even if they are continents away, they can connect. Even if the person is no longer with us on the physical plane, they may have departed, they may have died. But by connecting through that love, you can feel it. The matrix cuts through time. The matrix cuts through space. The matrix doesn't even care whether you are in this living reality or not. Because the soul, the essence, the divine energy is what contains the vibration of what you are. And you can reach to that anywhere. Not only that, but it doesn't even depend on your being able to recognize the person. Let's say you have a very deep, essential, loving relationship with a person. And this relationship is going through lifetime after lifetime. Let's say you don't know about it. You have no understanding of where that particular person is. And you come in contact with that person. It just takes one look, one moment, all of a sudden, without your awareness, your hearts leap out to connect. And you are doing what you can to somehow or another cover that over because of embarrassment or the inappropriateness of it or the problematic nature of it. But the heart cannot be cheated. And not only that, you may not even have any contact and know that that person or many of these people are there and you're longing for them. They are longing for you. You feel that kind of like pulling, these energies pulling you into situations which you wonder, what am I doing here? Two people can be on other sides of the planet, yet these strings within the matrix are pulling them physically together. Even if you're not aware of who or where or how or why, if you were to just be in your natural state, totally relaxed, completely within your own space, and you were allowing yourself to open up to the connections which are already there, you would experience them, perhaps as faceless connections, but you would experience them nonetheless. And if you were to feel the connections, even to those who are not in this physical, sharing our physical earth together, those who are in other dimensions, other realms, other levels or layers of the matrix, if you will, it's all one matrix, you can experience the same thing, that support, that love. Now, why is that? Naturally, that's because of the nature of what this matrix is. It's all the energy of the divine everywhere, that one unified energy of love, support, understanding, compassion, beauty. It is the very nature of existence that that love and connection is within it, because that is the fiber of that existence. That is what holds it together. And because we have met people in the past, we have established deep connections in the past, we do renew these connections in the period between lives, we easily, well, not so easily, but we can, when we want to, reestablish those connections. Especially when we no longer try to block away all these things, when we no longer try to pretend that they don't exist. But because of the nature of Radha and Krishna, because of the nature of the divine personalities, that can also be expanded to all living beings. Those who have that universal kind of love for all of the energy of the divine, of the supreme, are those who understand that fundamental characteristic of it and don't try to block it. Who don't try to selfishly grab a part of it and claim it as their own, but rather are very happy with being connected with the whole. Those who feel that spiritual connection with all living beings, those who feel that definite spiritual oneness with the divine, know that the way in which their energy manifests from their individuated consciousness, their individuated personality, is just perfectly complementary, perfectly harmonious with all other beings. They don't fight it, because it's that fighting with it that creates stress, that removes our capacity to work with, manipulate, so to speak, for good, to enter into and maneuver around the matrix according to our desire. You gotta go. Now, I know it sounds lousy when you use words like manipulate or work with, or, you know, it brings up the feeling of exploitation. It brings up the feeling of selfishness. It brings up the feeling of personal aggrandizement. And I'm sorry for using such words, but, you know, this is a spontaneous discussion, so it's very hard to pick the exact words when you need them. But that is why it is so very, very, very important that one have this value structure, have this spiritual ethics, spiritual values, which will guide what one does with power. Now, I am not saying, for sure, I am not saying that it is not possible to have power, it is not possible to be able to do things unless you have this understanding that I have explained about. Not at all. Power can be attained in a variety of ways. You don't have to use power for good. You can use power for anything. One can gain power simply by the desire to have it. After all, when one has a fierce desire to do something, it is always possible for them to accomplish their goal in a variety of ways. Because the amazing thing about this matrix is that you can enter through it in all kinds of manners. For example, let's say you're a scientist, or let's say you're a kind of a mystical person who only believes in energy as a material kind of a force. Or rather, you don't even make material spiritual distinctions. You just say there's energy, there's power, and that's all there is. So let's say you just see energy and power as just an aspect of existence. You're aware of energy. You're aware of the power you have within you. And you then project that into physical objects or into other beings or whatever you want, simply because you find it advantageous or enjoying to do so. There are people who do that for evil. Let's say they wish to harm others with their energy because they don't like them or somebody paid them to do it. Let's say there are people who are trying to satisfy their sensual desires by doing such a thing. Or let's say there's somebody who simply wants to exploit others' energy to take it from them, or to ruin something they're doing, or to pick up things or gain things from other places. This love or hate doesn't even have to enter into it. Emotion doesn't have to enter into it. It can even just be a calculated manner to make money. So it is not necessary for the gain of power. It's not necessary for the capacity to manipulate things within the matrix that you understand spiritual mysticism. It is not necessary. And if you remember, this whole discussion is not about giving you the capacity to use mystical energies for your own benefit. That's not the point of it. The point about spiritual mysticism is that the mysticism nurtures the spiritual capacity to connect, to prosper, to evolve. That is the point of this discussion. So, the premise upon which we are discussing this is that these mystical capacities, the way in which we conceive of ourselves, see ourselves, the way which our energies work within this matrix, are a wonderful manner, a wonderful way in which we can connect to the divine, connect to all living beings, experience that universal love that is already there. And a wonderful way in which you can be of service to others, which I feel personally is simply the most wonderful gift a living being can offer. It is such a wonderful gift to be able to connect with the Supreme, connect with the Divine Source, connect with yourself. I'm not saying that these words have no value, these words have no meaning, that concepts are simply an illusion. That's not the point of the point that understanding is the most important aspect. But rather that understanding is the source of all that we value in our lives. When you get to the point where you say, oh, that's it. Oh, yes, it's clear. That's what counts. Whether you understand how to explain it or not, whether you can express it in words or not, is not the point. After all, the capacity to express what you experience and what you realize in words, the capacity to be able to share it with others with words or concepts is something that you cultivate. It's not something that's just natural to people. And not everybody has such capacities naturally. I mean, it's something which certain personalities can do better than other personalities. So that's not the point of it. It doesn't depend on that. To really be of service, to really have that understanding, which that connection with divine love brings, that we wish to be of service to others, does not depend on philosophy or the capacity to express it. It is not something which is an intellectual accomplishment. It's not something that you can learn in a school and get a degree in or a certification. When you have that understanding of your essence, of your energy, of your love, and you have that connection to the divine source of all things, the divine balance. Because if you think of a source, you think that we came from that, which is not really so. But rather, you speak it of as a divine balancing point. Like, for example, if there was a pivotal point to which all things are connected and everything is spinning from that pivotal point. That's probably a better way to understand it. I mean, after all, it's so hard to speak about a source when everything's eternal, when there is no beginning or end, that this whole time is a mythical concept that we utilize for the sake of our convenience. When we think of the divine as the balance, that's also there in the Upanishad, remaining the balance. In other words, everything is resting. Like, let's say, for example, you have somebody who's carrying some, like in India, they had these sticks across their shoulder with two pots, and they're carrying, let's say, pots of yogurt or milk on their shoulders. So it is resting upon that person. If you think about the Supreme as that personality who is holding together all things, if you just imagine that matrix like a net, like a multi-dimensional net, you know, a net with little squares, little boxes. Now, if you put two nets together and connect them, you have these two nets with these little cubes inside. And if you could just conceive of the whole existence as just flooded with these cubes in all dimensions, in all places, everywhere. And you see that all of these cubes are like atoms, but that which holds it all together is that extra energy of the divine, the subatomic level. These are just examples. And the living consciousnesses of the divine, which are all just suspended everywhere, as if on the shoulders of the Supreme, are all just suspended in this unlimited way throughout all existence. In this way, one understands the nature of the Supreme compared to the nature of the living entity. So instead of thinking of the Supreme as a source, and we are an emanation, and there's a very big, and we are a very small, and we are a separate, we think of how we are all compact as that one existence. So using the word source is not very appropriate in this sense. We would say the balance. Yet, when we say, think of balance, it can either be something in balance, or someone who is performing the act of bringing things into balance. Or that personality whose very nature is that balance. Therefore, a supreme fundament. And yet fundament is a bad word because it implies underneath holding up that which is above. And that's not what's going on either. Therefore, matrix is a great word. It's that field everywhere upon which everything is suspended. And the amazing thing about the matrix is that nothing is stuck in its cube. These cubes are not stuck and fixed that way. Everything moves. Everything moves. All energies are just transforming and metamorphizing and moving from here to there and coming into rest, yet not being in rest. And it's these transformations which bring about the illusion of time, because it was one way, and now it's another way, but it's all within this existence. And again, these are but words. Really, what I'm trying to do, the whole purpose of these two lectures, is to bring you to a point where all of a sudden, you just feel the matrix, and you go, ah, that's it. Last week after the meditation, many people were writing to me, thanking me, saying how wonderful it was. Really, all it was just a mood where my intention might have pervaded it, simply that you would experience that matrix and come to all of a sudden your own understanding of it, which would make you go, oh, yes. Now, sometimes when people listen to what I'm saying, they get tired. They just go into some kind of relaxed state. They may even fade away, and they not understand why. Because the intention, the force behind what I'm saying, that's going with the words, but is not directly obvious with the words, is see it, feel it, enter into it. You are already in it. Just lift the veil. Feel comfortable with it, because there is no veil. Just like when a computer is transferring data someplace else, like in an email, or even when I'm speaking, this is being broken down into packets of information which are being sent across the internet. But a lot of that information is not the voice which is transformed into digital realm, but it's information saying this is this packet number, it belongs in this place, this packet came from this port, it's going to that port. So when we speak with each other, there are words, yet there are these control emotions, control feelings, control programs that are flowing with the words underneath, but which carry our intention, which carry our motivation, which carry our energy. Now, let's say there's a reason in your life that you don't want to see. You don't want to see. You don't want to experience the matrix. Kind of like, you know, when there's a big thunderstorm outside, you don't want to open the door and look at it. You want to keep the door shut and feel safe under the bed. So when you're in such a state, you are saying, I don't want to open the door. So some people who don't want to experience this, they listen to what the words I'm saying. And it's very nice about words and concept because you can just simply block them out, you see. I can say things to you and they can all be blocked out. You don't even care about the words. Your mind can go into other realms. But you can't stop the energies, unless you're very good at that. Of course, you can do it too, but you can't stop the energies which are underneath the words or mixed with the words or surround the words which are coming to you. So when you don't want to see, yet these energies are bringing you into that mood of seeing, your consciousness shuts you down so that you don't have to face what's happening and you fade away. It's the defense mechanism which says, uh-oh, you can't handle this. Good night. But the effect was there. The experience is there. The exchange is there. And one day, believe it or not, when you're not, for some reason, something has slightly adjusted inside so that you don't mind opening the door in the storm, all of a sudden you go, ah, yeah, that's it. Because this is what I'm trying to present. This is the service I wish to perform, to just bring you to the point where all of a sudden you say, ah, yes, that's the whole point. Because when you get to that, ah, yes, you then understand how these little cubes in the matrix, these little things which you think are walls, are simply supports or balances. And when you wish to work compatibly within that balance, in agreement with the love of the balance, you can move with such power throughout it and be of service throughout it as you like. When you feel the mood of the balance, when you feel the love of the balance, when you feel the reason of the balance, and you vibrate with it in such an excited way that, yes, I like that, that's good. And then you wish to be of service, which is the reason of the balance. You may then do so freely. Now, I am not saying that bending spoons has no value. Absolutely not. I remember I told you about that guy we met who made the cigarette fly around and do all these mystical things. These people are very, very valuable because they just blow away all those conceptions of limitation. Because when you free yourself from this conception of limitation, you then have no obstacle to understanding this, to understanding, ah, that's it. So the point of what I'm doing is not to tell you what to do. The point is to put you in the right mood to do it. What is it? To do what you are, what you already want, and to take away the obstacles and to understand how obstacles got there in the first place so that you can take away the obstacles. Because when you have all that capacity within yourself and you get to the aha point, you will be feeding that universal development. You'll be feeding others. The more it happens, the faster it happens. The more that do it, the more that will do it. It's like just raising the bar, raising the vibration, raising, raising, raising. And this will just make like a vacuum effect, a suction effect, which will just bring people up very wonderfully into themselves. To try to convince other people with words is very difficult. But to just bring them into the aha is so effective. But it requires a lot of energy. It requires a lot of support, a lot of love, a lot of just opening up spaces for people to feel safe in within the balance. So I might say divine harmony, the balance, is attained through spiritual mysticism. We have a question here about what is hindering real love, that there's possibility that desires hinder love. But what actually is the real hindrance of our natural love? Now, in general, if you want to talk about that which hinders anything natural about us, anything natural about what we are, you have to speak about those things which are placed upon us or which we place upon ourselves. So in other words, all of those external things, all of those things which are not of our own nature, our own energy, are those things which block our energy. And that which blocks our energy or diffuses our energy will block our love, which is the essence of our energy. Stress, tension, anxiety, fear, pain, all of these things have the capacity, the potential to block our natural love. It's not that they have to do it. We may find ourselves being blocked by them, but it's not that it has to be that way. So natural love is natural. It's that which is already there. So anything unnatural, anything that is not coming from within us, not coming from our energy, anything that is being placed over it, smothering it, will block it. Now, someone may say that it's also a two-way street, that which we desire to block our love will naturally have the potency to do so. But a lot of times the stress or anxiety or the difficulties placed upon us are not our desire. They're coming from other people's desires or other people's intentions upon us. It's out of our control. And that which is out of our control certainly is something we have to deal with. It's just part of the world that there are others who are trying to impact us for whatever reason they have. So all of these factors have to be dealt with, and we have to somehow or another balance our energy so that when we wish to experience and to project our natural love, we can do so. We have the power to set aside these things that are external and still express ourselves. And again, the factors which are affecting our capacity to do so have been discussed in this lecture, have been discussed before. It's a question of consciously taking back your capacity to understand the position of power from which you work with or deal with the external world. I have here a question from last week. I've already answered quite a few of them, but this question I think is interesting because it addresses the structure of the matrix, and I just want to answer it quickly. When you're building a house, I'm just repeating the question, one starts doing it by digging a hole for a foundation. This is the first, in this example, the first step towards creating the mass above the house, the reality of the house. So what would be a complementary or similar idea to understand or to move from where we are now into the building of reality in other dimensions or within the matrix? Now, what is interesting about this question is that within the question itself is the answer. Because if you think about building a house, digging the hole for the foundation is not the breaking through step. It is not the significant step in the construction of the house. It is just somewhere in the middle of the process. Now, to be fair to the questioner, I'm sure the questioner didn't mean that the way it sounded. But still, it's a good thing to speak about, because when you're building the house, you go to the foundation, you might think it's the first real step in the contact between the idea of the house and the manifestation of it, but it's just one of many things. And to find out the real breakthrough point is not so simple. For example, before the digging had to take place, the machine had to come that dug. There were so many steps to bring it there. And then the survey had to be done of where to dig. You know, the stakes had to be put there. Then somebody had to organize all of that, bringing the survey people, bringing the digger, planning the house, planning the foundation, getting the permission. So many things had to take place. The digging of the hole of all these things is the simplest and least interesting aspect of it. Yet I understand the question. The question is, at which point do we sink our teeth into the experience? At which point do we take the chapati and have it and move it, manipulate it, and go, ow! I mean, there's the pizza. I thought of the pizza. I cooked the pizza. The pizza was delivered. We're looking at the pizza. We're salivating over the pizza. At what point does the damn pizza go in the mouth so I can chew it? I understand it. I understand perfectly well that feeling. I know the frustration of what it's like. I mean, it's really that way that we feel there's got to be this breakthrough. Like there's this wall and we smash it with a sledgehammer. We open the door. We walk through. It's dark and it becomes light. The lightning comes, blast, the illumination, everything changes. But that, all of those understandings, all of that desire to break through a wall is born of a misunderstanding of what is going on. And that's why in this discussion, I tried to explain that it's not like you are the victim and your understanding, your consciousness is somewhere else and you've got to get there. It is already there and you've put blankets over it. You've covered yourself. And when you say, hey, what am I doing? And you just kick it off, that's when you've got your power again. Okay, these are examples, these are funny pictures, but this is not really the way it works. The way it works is that it's something that just appears when you let it appear. It's not something you focus on and cause it to appear. In other words, it's something you flow into rather than something you break through. And yet, here I was saying that I want you to get to the aha point. Understand? The aha point. Okay, so the aha point, okay? That's like a breakthrough, isn't it? It's like breakthrough. Aha. But it's not so. It's like you flow into a space and then you open your eyes and aha. There's a difference between breaking and flowing into. And let's take the example of a person who's not experiencing what they think they should experience. They don't see visions. They don't feel things like that. They can't manipulate things. And therefore, they think there's something wrong with them. The work is going on. The movement is going on. The evolution is going on. The transformation is going on. And when one realizes there's nothing to fear, there's nothing to fear, and lifts that one obstacle out of the way, or walks around it, the aha will flow. It's not that, you know, you've done nothing, and then all of a sudden, you've got everything. That's what breakthrough might mean. It's all of a sudden like, boom, illumination hits. It's that you've done all the work, and when you're feeling safe, you allow yourself to enter into that space where you belong. It's a small thing. It's a little thing. It's a very subtle thing with enormous power. It's sometimes even the smallest things affect us in the biggest ways. You can't quantify how reality will impact us, or how what we do, or how what we experience will impact us, because sometimes it just takes the smallest thing to make that, of course. Now here's a related question. Why is it a person who can do things on one level, for example, be a healer, is unable to do things on other levels or other kinds of subtle things? Well, I've already answered that question in the lecture, but not exactly specifically in such an obvious way. The answer is that when you focus or you specialize in a particular kind of subtle awareness, you tend towards a particular kind of energetic work. Like, for example, when I told you about that guy who made the cigarette fly around and changed the watches or whatever, I talked to him and he cultivated these powers his whole life. He saw it in terms of a discipline, in terms of focusing his energy, focusing his consciousness, building his strength, practicing, exercising, building muscle. That's not the answer the people who asked the question expected. They expected answers like, I was born with it. Well, of course he also said that. He certainly was born with capacities. But it wasn't that it just happened when he realized it. And it's not that all of a sudden one day, boom, he woke up and there it was. He had a potential. He had a desire. He cultivated it step by step. And in my particular case, I have a different kind of interest to use my energies. I have another kind of thing which I feel could be of service. My service to the world would be different because I'm a different person. I have also a different kind of potential, a different kind of focus in my life that I have tried to specialize in when I do that kind of work. So even if you are within that energetic awareness, that doesn't mean you can do everything. Of course, potentially speaking, you probably could do everything. But you would specialize in those things which are resonating well according to your desire. But as you advance in those particular disciplines, and they are to a certain extent disciplines, actually they're enormous disciplines, you connect to the discipline through the agency of the matrix, and the mystical aspects of it focus to give power. You know, in 1975, when I was transcribing the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, that part about the universe for Srila Prabhupada, in Mayapur we were, he gave me a very interesting assignment. Now, really, this was a very confusing time. I mean, I had to deal with the people in L.A. who were calling me and saying, this makes no sense, what do I say? I'd go back to Prabhupada, he would say, I'd said it the best I can, I can't do it any better than that, they just have to edit the words. I would tell that to them. They would pull their hair out. It was a very confusing time. And then I remember he gave me in Mayapur right after that, right when we finished, he said, you should rewrite the fifth canto. Now that was one of those kind of tasks that would go right over the head and leave you bewildered, like, you know, rewrite the fifth canto. What are you kidding me? So then he sent me to meet various experts in India in the field of Vedic astronomy, people who had great realization, even mystics. And I must admit, I had a marvelous time doing that. That was like, for me, complete ecstasy. That was an assignment that I loved. But after a while, I was starting to get really disappointed because everyone I talked to didn't have a clue. I mean, it just was a very disappointing experience. There were, honestly speaking, no people in India who could explain it any better than I could figure it out or we had already understood. So in Calcutta, people were pointing me towards this amazing astrologer. This man had an incredible capacity. You know, in India, there's a big problem that people don't have birth certificates. I mean, they don't know when they're born. A lot of people, unless the family wrote it down because they were aware of this, they have no idea when they were born. Some of them don't even know what month they were born in. I mean, my grandfather, he didn't even know what year he was born in. They had no clue about his birth time. So the Italians, they put on his birth certificate, January 1st, 1900 at midnight. And I used to think, wow, what an incredible grandpa I've got. He was born January 1st, 1900 at midnight. What a special guy. You can imagine how disappointed I was when my mother finally told me, oh, that was because they had no idea when he was born. They just put it there because they had to put something. But anyway, back to the story. So everybody was pointing me to this guy. He was an astrologer by profession, and he was one of these people who used to help those who had no clue when they were born. Now, there are a lot of these guys in India. I mean, not tons of them, you know, maybe one or two famous persons per city or state in India. But this person in Calcutta was unique because he saw your planets flying around your head. He didn't even see, perhaps, your birth time or anything. He didn't tell you about that. He just told you your chart directly because he saw the planets within you. Now, I thought, my God, if the guy can see your planets, he must know the structure within which the planets are. So I've got to find him. So naturally, as you can imagine, the way this story is going to end, he died the week before I found him. This seems to have been the story of trying to uncover the truth. But anyway, I want to talk about how it is that he developed that particular power. Let's say you're an astrologer. You work all the time with people. You're all the time dealing with a physical being who has particular energy, quality, characteristics, and you're seeing their representation on this piece of paper, and you're correlating through your experience many different ways that you understand how the feeling of the person, the energy of the person relates to the piece of paper. So you learn the techniques, you learn the way in which to create this chart which represents a person in some way, and you learn how to describe it very well. So you go through the mechanical process of correlating data with expected characteristics. And then after a while of doing this, you, as you expand your own capacities to connect with the person, you more and more start speaking about the person and less are speaking about the expected correlation between planets and characteristics. Now, why do you do that? Well, because, after all, the planetary influences at the time of your birth or presently are those which indicate the package of energy that you are supplied with or you have taken into your life. You are the product of all of the energies of the universe, all of the spiritual energies within which you exist, the balance, and your requirement to have a body, to have physical, emotional, and mental characteristics to continue your evolution. This is your field of activities. But this field is not a flat field. It's a field with all kinds of structures, with all kinds of elements within it, which you have to navigate your way through or utilize to continue life. So within the matrix of balance is your cube. And within your cube, we know that we're talking allegorically, there is a matrix of your consciousness. And that matrix of your consciousness is a product of the potential which has evolved in your life. So the astrological analysis would include simply a look into that matrix. But you could also look directly into that matrix when you are attuned to do so by your sensitivity. So in mystical or esoteric astrology, you would be actually reading the matrix of the planets within the context of all the analysis that is usually taking place in an astrological consultation. So those who are mystically aware, those astrologers who are mystically aware, can even bypass the paper, which is simply an indication of what's already there. They just directly view what's already there. The man in Calcutta even went further than that. Not only could he view what was already there, but he knew the planetary arrangements which arranged what was already there and could speak not only just a personal understanding of the person, but exactly how that related planetarily. So he was so specialized in his field that he had the capacity to directly relate this person's energetic field and the planetary conditions within which that field must have manifested. Can you imagine the development that person must have had? Such an incredible mystic development to be able to see the package of a person's appearance, the package of that person's energy, the planetary situation of the universe in one simply conscious awareness. It's just such a mind-boggling thing. It's actually a mystical, universal thing. Let's say a person is a healer. That same person looks at the energy of a person and feels, sees the matrix within which the bodily aberration, dis-ease, has manifested, sees the causes, sees the effects, and understands how to explain it and what to do about it. Now, I remember we used to talk about this joke of, the mystic yogi Chakravarti walking across the Bay of Bengal, and then a fisherman on the other side said, "What did you waste 80 years to learn how to do that? I could just take my boat and row across it." I know we have talked about that joke. But I would question that value judgment that fisherman might have made. Okay, for him, it made no sense to do so, because for him, all he thought of is, I'm going to go from here to there. And if going across the water means is what I want to do, I can do it with a boat. What that magician was doing was quite different. The magician was displaying the focus of his energy. He was a magician, after all, and how he could walk on water with it. After all, magic has its value because it expands our horizons. It expands our understanding of the possibilities within the matrix. So each of us have that potential. Each of us in our own way. Let's say you're a cook. Let's just talk about a cook. A plain, ordinary cook. A cook is somebody nobody considers, nobody cares about, not very important. But there are historical accounts. There are experiences where a person is so focused with the energy on the act of cooking, where the person is so aware of what they are doing with the food that the experience of eating is life transforming for those who partake of the food. That's not a product only of taste. Taste is one portion, obviously, of it, but it's not a product of taste. The person is aware of the people who are going to be eating. The person is aware of the relationship, even between the different dishes in the meal, of combining foods, the effect on the body, the effect of herbs used, the understanding of where to get the materials, which materials from which place, at which time of the year, the details, into such little itsy-bitsy details to paint a picture of energy, of a feast which will change your life. All of this is the focus, the concentration, the discipline which has been developed, and the whole mystical aspect of mystical cooking creates a whole nother level of integration within the matrix. Anything you want to talk about can be understood in these terms. Therefore, the bottom line is, spiritual mysticism is intimately connected with how you manifest your energy in your day-to-day life. I feel that this is one of the core reasons why in the Vedic understanding, Varnashram was considered to be a spiritual principle, because it focused people's consciousness to such a highly evolved way within a particular way of manifesting their day-to-day lives. The brahmanas who could kill with high-sounding words, who could kill with their curses, who could bless with great opulence, bless with family and children. The kshatriyas who could use weapons which had mystic capacities to shoot thousands of arrows, to knock down a whole army, to throw at super atomic weapons. This is the mystical aspect of it. We're not concerned with day-to-day activities like doing the laundry or cleaning or whatever within these special literatures. We focus upon the mystical, that which is extraordinary, that which is a manifestation of the spiritual mysticism which makes everything what it specially is in connection with the divine harmony. Because it is this mystical aspect, the mystical development of spirituality, which draws you to the connection to Radha and Krishna. Lord Chaitanya's associates, so many of them, had such incredible evolved characteristics, the way their energy manifested in such a mystical way. This is not accidental. This is not just they dropped from the spiritual sky and boom, all these things were there. These were conscious awareness, conscious integration of their energy within the matrix, wherever they were within the matrix. Anyway, I'm sorry I went on for such a long time about this point, but I feel it's like so, so very important. It's so, so the key to integrating this so-called spiritual and material. It's a completely bogus way of differentiating within the matrix, but it's the key to the aha. It's the key by which the smallest aspects of your life can just be focused into this incredible attainment. And it's within the reach of all of you. Just have that confidence.